Hello, curious colleague. This week's episode is a catch-up with Lauren Byrne of Feld's Farm. I first spoke to Lauren and Mike about 18 months ago and published that conversation as the very first episode, titled The Humble Onion. I have also just posted a bonus episode where I tried to clean up the sound quality of the original Humble Onion to make it easier to listen to. If you've already heard that episode, you don't need to go back to it unless you want to refresh your memory. In fact, you don't need to listen to that episode at all to still get a lot out of today's episode. Briefly, to recap, Mike and Lauren are young farmers who left careers in hospitality as chefs to grow a market garden that now supplies some of Tasmania's best restaurants, as well as 100 families a week in Launceston, Tasmania. In 2020, they won a gold medal in the From the Earth category at the Delicious Produce Awards for their veggies, which I reckon is pretty amazing on the back of their first season. I returned to Feld's Farm last month to find out how they have progressed the farm and the business. Lauren has some fantastic insights in this episode and a philosophy that will resonate with all farmers, whether they work on a grand scale or just in their pocket handkerchief-sized veggie patch in suburbia. My name is Kate, and I'm the curious farmer. In 2012, my husband and I started Leap Farm. We apply ecological principles to try and benefit the environment while producing great-tasting food. Our endeavour has led to more questions. So join me as I get all the dirt straight from the farmers, chefs, scientists and people who love to eat good food about how we can make informed decisions about the best ways to grow, shop and eat food with our health and the health of our planet in mind. I just wanted to find out how things have changed and what you're doing now and how the first couple of seasons have gone, I guess.
A lot has changed. We experienced our first summer, which is our peak season, and it was overall a really big success in terms of crops and yields. I think that's not to be unexpected though, because you know, as soon as you break ground, you seem to have the best goings for the first season or so. And that's when you start having to really focus on your crop rotations and everything. So the first season, more about just getting the food in the ground and tending to them. And I guess our focus now has been to make this a full-time role. So I think when we last spoke, I was still working in town. And now, since December of the year we moved in, we've both been full-time, which has been the biggest difference to productivity and just, you know, mental well-being for us both.
So that's now about 15 months.
Yep. So we've been able to sustain a living. COVID was a bit of a whack, but, you know, we were really fortunate to be, well, fortunate or unfortunate, whatever way you look at it, to be eligible for the first round of JobKeeper. So that kept us afloat, and along with our veg box sales through the COVID lockdowns. But since returning to the market, we've just been focusing on the spring production so that we can have a bumper summer. And we've really expanded out even further so that we have enough growing space to do proper crop rotations, as well as cover cropping and resting and growing more food in the shoulder seasons, which seems to be where we need to make more money and we have abundant resources. Like, we've got enough water in the shoulder seasons versus in summer, so we're taking advantage of that to grow more food and hopefully store it for the winter. So focusing on lots of storage crops like onions, we're growing a lot of pumpkins, and we're also trialing brassicas that can sit in the field and just harvest as they need. So that's been really, really valuable.
So in terms of the area that you have under cultivation, you've pretty much doubled that from what I can see in the last 6 months or so.
Yes. So we've taken 5 blocks and we've turned them into 9, and we should be adding a 10th, which will be the size that we want to stay at. That works from breaking down the wage that we want to draw in the future from the farm. So we think about how much money we want to earn in a year that will, you know, help us live a comfortable life and still allow us to be the majority laborers in the farm. We hope to employ someone eventually to help us with harvesting and big jobs around the farm. But we want to always focus on the farm as just the predominant people working on it is Michael and myself. So the size reflects what we're capable of managing as well as, you know, what we'd like to earn a living from. So hopefully it'll work.
That's what we all hope, isn't it? So how have you improved your shoulder seasons?
So we've expanded out. We've been lucky enough, we've bought a storage container so that we can have a vermin-proof area to cure onions and store pumpkins and radishes, winter radishes and turnips and swedes and things like that. We've also devoted quite a lot of time to looking through seed companies and figuring out the best crops that we can do on our scale to maximize profits. So one area that's really fascinating for my husband, Michael, is the chicories and radicchios. He really loved cooking with them in England as a chef, and it's something he's really passionate about. And so that's a fantastic overwintering crop that we can do in our climate. So he's spent a lot of time thinking about the varieties that'll work in our area. And hopefully the income from that will be evening out our cash flow over those winter months so we can just harvest them as we need be. Does that answer?
I guess I'm also looking at that beautiful polytunnel that you've got out there.
We're also investing money in movable polytunnels. So we have, they're called caterpillar tunnels, and we get them from Activista down in Longley. And those have just been a complete game changer in that we're able to grow in a protected area that isn't heated, but really is a buffer from the very hard frosts we get in our area. And they allow us the ability to start crops early. So for instance, we're able to get our tomatoes in the ground much quicker. It's also able to prolong the seasons so we can keep crops in longer, which has been really beneficial. At the moment, we're putting the plastic over our peppers and eggplants. So far, they've just been growing outside and producing fine. But in order to keep them for a little bit longer and sort of give them a bit of a nudge into autumn, we're going to put the plastic over them to really protect them from the frost to maximize their profitability.
I guess what you were saying before is that
by increasing the area that you have under cultivation, you can actually keep those crops in the ground for longer, producing, and by putting the plastic polytunnel over those crops towards the end of their season, that provides them with the conditions to be able to keep producing. Yep. So then you have more opportunity to harvest from those crops for a longer period of time and therefore generate more income. So it's a two-tiered kind of thing. You needed more ground for planting, but you also needed the movable polytunnel to get crops going earlier and to leave them in the ground for longer. And so by having more area under cultivation, you've been able to do that.
Yeah, and we've been very specific about how many of these we have in our rotation. So when we eventually have 10 blocks under cultivation, whether that be them in a mixture of annuals or green manures, we're actually only ever going to have 3 polytunnels. Our beds, if you remember from the first episode, our beds are 20 meters long and each block has 12 of them. And so 3 polytunnels fits perfectly within those blocks. So those polytunnels will just be moved around as we do our crop rotations. And that would be a sufficient amount for us to overwinter things and to get stuff started in spring much earlier.
One of the things that's quite problematic when you're turning fresh pastured land into beds is the weed pressure. And I know that you really struggled with weeds initially. How is that going now, and what sort of things are you doing to help with the weed pressure?
Yes, so it looked like we were growing carrots in lawn in our first season. So whenever you turn over new ground, in our case pasture, very, very lush pasture, we killed off the first round of annual weeds. And so now we've seen a huge reduction in grasses, and it's now more about getting those perennial weeds out. So we've got a lot of runner grasses, we've got a lot of sheep sorrel, we've got a lot of dock. And so the weed pressure this year is far, far more manageable, but we're still having to use techniques to get out those harder weeds.
So what sort of techniques did you initially use to get rid of the annual grasses?
So we start each block with a rotary hoe to turn the grass into the soil. And then we've been fortunate enough to recently acquire a tractor, which we've bought a power harrow for that job now. So initially it was simply covering with fabric. It was tilling with a tilther, which is just a power drill on a little mini rotary hoe blade that you run along the beds. So that seemed to get rid of the annuals pretty well, but it seems that the running grass needs to either be, well, we've tried tarping it and you can pull the tarp back even after 6 months and the roots are still there and alive, which is very frustrating. So I think our next step is to see whether we can use tillage with the power harrow to constantly keep pushing that back and making it harder and harder for that to sort of regrow. And hopefully it'll just become less dominant. Things like sheep sorrel, unfortunately, it's simply weeding by hand in the early stages of sowing a crop. So for instance, carrots, we will do flame weeding and stale seed bedding when we sow carrots, but those perennial weeds we know pop up, and so we simply have to just go in with our hands and weed those out in the initial stage, and then the carrots are fine and there's no weeds in the bed for that period of time, and then it'll happen again. So it seems to be a work in progress.
But you've definitely noticed that there's been a reduction just by keeping on top of the weeds?
Yes, a huge reduction. And also, like, having a different mindset. I think we have a lot of friends who have very immaculate gardens. You look at a lot of farms in the States who have been there for decades doing what they do, and you inevitably compare yourself to people like that, and you have to go, no, we're in the first stages. It's going to be a little bit harder for us, and we need to be kind to ourselves and say, look, pick your battles. If I can manage weeds in this block because they are easier, for instance, one block is overrun with plantain, which is a fairly easy weed to remove, I would rather attack that and, you know, leave the fight for another block another day, i.e. the sheep sorrel. I'd rather put my mental energy in the things that I can make a big impact initially with, and just nut away at the things that are just going to be harder and harder to remove, like sheep sorrel. And I find that that seems to be the sort of way other farmers we talk to approach their perennial weeds as well, is just a constant vigilance and a constant eye on them, but not being bogged down by having to get rid of it all at once. It is just a process of, you know, slowly removing it.
And I think one of the things you've actually demonstrated so beautifully is that it's about celebrating those wins as well. Gee, I've done a really good job with the plantain on this block. and that's going to make life better for next season when there won't be as much plantain in that bed. Yeah. And that is then going to give me the capacity to tackle the sheep sorrel in the bed next door.
Yeah, yeah. It really is about being a bit pragmatic and understanding, you know, your limitations. Because at the end of the day, we could be like, oh, screw trying to be gentle and kind. We'll just spray, you know. That'd make life so easy. But I think you're always going to come up to problems and have loads of constraints. And it's just about, you know, having the mindset that you can't fix it all, and letting yourself off the hook for certain things that just won't make the biggest impact. A lot of farmers talk about the 80-20 sort of rule, and it's like, what can I do to get to that 80 will make more of a difference in my system than that little 20? So we're always thinking about the, I think economists call it the cost benefit. Yeah, it's very important.
One of the other things that I noticed when I had a little wander around the bed was that that bed with the plantain in it, I noticed that you've done a really good job of really crowding it out with the way you're planting. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
I think one of the biggest successes for us has been the choice to grow very fast biointensive crops in the initial years. So we grow a lot of salad mix and we grow a lot of carrots. And these are crops that you can sow, you know, 3 to 5 rows on a bed, which will shade out a lot of the weeds. And I think that's been one of the best weed management tools, because you're able to focus on only weeding the pathways, for instance, rather than having to weed the 2 rows of a broccoli crop and the pathways. So it really breaks it down in how we approach cultivation. So with the biointensive approach, there are certain measurements that most farms would use. We generally like to follow those guidelines in terms of spacings, but you know, instead of doing 6 rows of carrots, we found it easier in the first years at least to grow 5 rows, because we know that we're going to have to get in there with our hands and weed the sorrel. And having 5 rows gives you a bit more room. You know, your hands are bulky, the seedlings are tiny, you don't want to be pulling out the carrots with sorrel. So the 5 rows actually makes that job easier. Whereas we plant the lettuce really, really densely, 3 rows at about 25 centimeters apart, and we found that has been an amazing improvement on the weeds, because they grow so fast and shade everything out relatively quickly. So spacing is really important to us, especially because the majority of our weeding is with wire weeds and steropose, which have to fit in between the rows. And that seems to be more prevalent now that we've invested in a tool like the paper pot. So in the initial transplanting of the paper chains, you have to be very careful when you cultivate not to pull on the chains, because they haven't biodegraded like as quickly in the first stages. So that's also something that we're very wary of.
Any other tips and tricks that you can give to, well, what I would now describe myself as, novice gardeners in the veggie patch like me?
Picking your battles, you know. And for a home gardener, that could just be, what do you simply enjoy eating the most, and putting your attention on that and meeting the needs of that crop rather than trying to do it all. Focus in on the things that are really important to you. So I would much rather focus on keeping my spring onions weeded than my broccolis, because my spring onions are far more profitable than my broccoli. So just breaking everything down and looking at, you know, the constraints you're up against, and looking at that cost benefit is so important.
While my discussion with Lauren was less than 20 minutes long, My goodness, it was as nutritious as one of their carrots. There is so much in this episode for gardeners like me and for other market gardeners. What Lauren did really well in this conversation was make me think a little more clearly about things like our local microclimate and how we can take advantage of it. So stop battling against your conditions where your land is, and stop battling against what other people think that you should be growing, and tailor your farming practices for your local conditions and your own needs. She made me think about how a shoulder season can be extended by gently manipulating that microclimate through simple mechanisms like protecting crops from wind and frost through the use of polytunnels. She gave us plenty of clever solutions to tackle weeds, and the one that I love the most is the close planting of fast-growing leafy greens to rob the weeds of resources like light and water. But the bit in our conversation that I like the most and that I think is relevant for every farmer and landholder, well, actually for humans in general, is how to manage your mindset. By managing your mindset, you become more compassionate to yourself. By being compassionate to yourself, you don't compare yourself to others. You need to remind yourself that those people are not on the same journey with the same circumstances that you face, and that's okay. By being compassionate to yourself, you also need to recognize your limitations. Most of the constraints that we have to work in are not of our choosing, whether they be drought or flood, deluge, or whether they be changing climate. But you need to work within those constraints and to do the best that you can. And you will learn, and then you will have the chance to do better next season. So, curious colleagues, thank you so much for continuing to support this podcast, rating and reviewing it, sharing it with friends and family, and for your feedback to me. As always, you can find me on Instagram and Facebook at Leap Farm, or you can email me at thecuriousfarmer@gmail.com if you have a question you'd like me to investigate or answer. Till next time.